Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio Studio B, this 26th day of April, 2024. John Carman's had computer problems today, may be joining or not. Plus, I've actually invited two different parties who might participate in our conversation and discussion, unknown whether either of them will be able to join. There's a huge amount of news to cover, however, so we're going to have no shortage of issues. Electronic Intifada, 200 days of genocide and resistance, canvases fight back. Let's listen to a bit. They give a countdown. Israel's genocide against Palestinians is now past 200 days with no end in sight. Despite suffering and horror beyond description, the resistance on the ground remains determined and strong, denying Israel any strategic achievement.
Hello and welcome back to the Electronic Intifada's live stream for Wednesday, April 24th. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman with my colleagues Ali Abrahima, Asa Wynn-Stanley, John Omer, and Tamara Nassar. It's day 201 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. We have another packed show for you today. We're hoping to connect with an organizer on Columbia University's campus as the encampment enters its second week and more campuses join in the Gaza solidarity actions. We'll also have a discussion with Professor Mohammed Abdu, who was just censured by Columbia University. And later on in the program, of course, John Elmer will take a look at videos from the resistance in Gaza and the West Bank, as well as a series of operations by Hezbollah. But first, some of the news over the last several days in Gaza and the West Bank. The Gaza government media office stated on Tuesday that over the last 200 days, more than 34,000 Palestinians have been killed, including nearly 15,000 children, and more than 77,000 have been injured. 30 children have died from Israel's engineered starvation policy, while approximately 17,000 children have lost either one or both of their parents in Israeli attacks. Nearly 500 medical staff, including physicians, specialists, paramedics, and volunteers, have been killed, and more than 300 medical workers have been arrested by Israeli forces. The Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor says that more than 130 journalists have been killed. This week, Israeli airstrikes and fire from naval gunships have continued to pound areas from the north to the south of the Gaza Strip. Starting with the south, Israeli airstrikes on Rafah near the Egyptian border have continued unabated, while Israel threatens a full-scale ground invasion. Activist Ahmed Mahdoun filmed this video on Sunday.
Oh, So as you see, airstrike inside Rafah city. It's near the tents and displaced camps.
That was activist Ahmed Madoun. Yesterday on Tuesday, journalist Ahmed Ibrahim posted a video of civil defense crews and residents digging through the rubble after the Israeli military shelled a home in the Salam neighborhood of Rafah. Civil defense told Al Jazeera that at least three people were killed and four others were injured, all from the same family. On Saturday night, Israeli airstrikes on Rafah killed 22 people, including 18 children, according to reports.
Well, there's much more forthcoming, but what's most important, in my opinion, is development of the student protests across the country. Very upsetting, it turns out, for Bibi Netanyahu. Information Liberation reports, it has to be stopped. Netanyahu demand pro-Palestinian protests at U.S. colleges be shut down. Who the hell is this guy to be talking about what students should be doing on U.S. college and university campuses? This is disgusting. This is repulsive. This is arrogance beyond belief. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Wednesday demanded the U.S. shut down the horrific pro-Palestinian protests taking place at colleges throughout the country. And, of course, that's because they're anti-Israel. They're anti-genocide. And because Israel is perpetrating the genocide, they're anti-Israel. Thus, they're qualified as anti-Semitic. It's the absurd logic of these deceivers, these mass murderers, these maniacs. Here's a prime minister of Israel tweeting, "What's happening in America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty." Frankly, nobody gives a damn about Jewish students or Jewish faculty. Honest to God, that's a gross exaggeration. This is on the order of the ADL spray painting swastikas on the walls of synagogues to play the victimhood card once again. This is reminiscent. This is Netanyahu. Of what happened in German universities in the 1930s, it's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally, but that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. How about the genocide? Isn't that supposed to be a reminiscent of what happened in Germany? Isn't that unconscionable? Doesn't that have to be stopped? Doesn't that have to be condemned and condemned unequivocally? Give me a break. Zionists say they don't feel safe on campuses. Well, they're going to exaggerate. They got the message. They know they're supposed to play along. Meanwhile, it's juxtaposed with Israel blowing up the Al-Arasa University campus in Gaza. Here we have a video of it. No sound on this, but the campus is about to be totally destroyed. Totally destroyed. Disgusting. And I'm very pleased John Carman has been able to join John. This business with Netanyahu telling America we should shut down our colleges and campuses, it shows he has no understanding of the Constitution, the First Amendment, the nature of college campuses, that the U.S. government shouldn't be intervening in any case, but being a dictatorial Zionist bigot and grotesque mass murder. Of course, he doesn't want protests that are going to make a difference. I'm so impressed with the students. I'm so supportive. I applaud them. Your thoughts, John?
You caught me in the middle of this computer crisis I had. Somebody went into the system and changed the setting, which is unbelievable. That's a hacker maneuver of some sort. But anyway, I've been monitoring this stuff, and I've seen this stuff before. Take into account me being Secret Service, working in Washington, D.C., protecting the embassies and the White House and so forth. It's the same type of thing when you see crowds of protesters. I've handled during when the Shah of Iran was visiting with Nixon, and they had the students, and they also had Savak, which is their Secret Service bad guys going around taking pictures. There are people that are agitators or professionally hired, just like the BLM, and the Antifa. So that was going on just the last several years. So it's the same thing again. When they start doing the protest marches, and I'm watching very carefully, analyzing it and looking at it, these people are being supported by who knows who, and they're going out there. One's going to be pro-Palestine. Now they've got pro-Israel this morning started up. You see what I mean?
Well, listen, John, just to take a bit of exception, after 35 years on American college and university campuses, I can tell you the anti-genocide, pro-Palestine movement is genuine and sincere. Yes. Any pro-Israeli counter-protest is going to be fabricated and fake. I have no doubt about it. We even have support here that Soros is supposed to be paying left-wing activists to head up campouts at colleges across America, and huge wads of cash are getting her share. This, in my opinion, is complete bullshit.
Right.
It was published in the Daily Mail. Students on campuses don't respond to being paid to protest. I mean, that's so insulting. I cannot believe it. Well, on the other hand, the pro-Israeli protesters, I guarantee you, those are paid. Who wants to support genocide if they're in their right mind, John?
No, I agree with you. I'm just going deeper and deeper because you have to realize also, or people have to realize, is that yeah, I heard the Soros comment before, and I go, yeah, there seems to be a pattern to that. How do we have proof that it's Soros? Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe they're just bad-mouthing him and using that term to say it's Soros, because they will do that too. It's like CIA operations. They'll put one lie out there, then they'll put a counter lie. You don't know what the truth is, but that's the propaganda that they're putting out. The bottom line is people are out there protesting. I look at it that way, very basic. And see who's protesting, what are their connections, and who are the people behind the scenes. And then you look at the leaders, the ringleaders going around like this one blonde-headed, long-haired, hippie-like guy. I'm telling you right now, they're recruiting CIA people from the colleges, and you know that. You know, just like up at Berserkly, you know, joke. They're getting people out there, one with a microphone, the other one to go out there and do the chant. You know, I won't even quote the chant. I won't quote a chant. Well, you could say like the free.
One of the chants is from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. I mean, that's pretty innocuous if you ask me. That's not inflammatory at all.
No, it isn't. But what's interesting is that we are supporting Israel by our administration, but they tried to put up a separate request for a state for Palestine. They didn't back it. So there you go. It's like back to 48 again. They can't be recognized by the United Nations, so they can't have a country based on Gaza. The Gaza Strip is a small country. I've seen countries smaller than that, but the point is it doesn't fit. It's a propaganda thing that it's a scenario that they keep repeating in history, and it never gets better. We have our embassy in Jerusalem now, which for many, many years we never had our embassy in Jerusalem, or Tel Aviv. I keep screwing that up. It's either Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or Tel Aviv. But
it was moved to Jerusalem. It was moved to Jerusalem by Donald Trump, which
that's a very bad move.
Very bad move, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, that's a religious capital, I guess, the way I was looking at it. But if they're not going to give them a place to go, I protected Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, and Carter at the White House in a private part of the mansion where nobody else was there, so they wouldn't have interference from people snitching out in the West Wing press corps. But what's interesting, that was in 1977, and then within 5 years in 81, 78, 79, 80, 81, 4 years, Anwar Sadat was assassinated by extremist Muslim troops in a parade. 81 was a bad year because that's the same time Hinckley tried to assassinate Reagan. You know, so it's all Poppy Bush behind the scenes. But this thing about Egypt was, is how come they couldn't give a little piece of land to these people next to Israel, and they could have Palestine and then Israel, but they didn't go for it. It's always an argument over history, even back in the Bible, about the Christians. I'm sorry, not the Christians, the Israelis or the Hebrews versus the Palestine thing. And then it gets biblical. And if you know the argument, I don't want to screw it up, but whoever was married and had the baby had a Palestinian baby. And as soon as the wife, Sarah, I think it was, that had the other baby, Abraham, then that's where they separated. Or was it Moses? I get it mixed up. So point is that they've always had this division, and they will do anything, even sacrifice 2/3 of their people, like communist dictatorship, communist scenarios. As long as they've got 1/3, they'll get by. And Hamas has always done rocket attacks for years. On NPR, you could hear them talking to these people with Hamas, and they don't ask, why did you throw rockets at Israel? They just went into all the other scenarios about how many rockets or what was the reason on the other angles. What did Israel do to you? But they didn't answer the question about why they attacked Israel. So usually if you attack somebody, they respond. And just recently we've got the attack from Iran through Iraq and Lebanon, right? What are we doing?
Yeah, John, I want to focus on the protests, the student protests here.
Oh, okay, okay.
Follow up with this. Let me add some from this Daily Mail article. Multiple leaders of the anti-Israel protests at college campuses across the nation have been revealed to be paid fellows of George Soros-connected groups. Three of the major figures in the pro-Palestinian encampments and universities are fellows at the Soros-funded U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, the New York Post reports. The USCPR, community-based fellows, are paid up to $7,800 for their labor. Campus-based fellows between $2,800 and $3,600 for spending 8 hours a week organizing campaigns led by Palestinian organizers. Now, they show a map here. And it's clear there are protests at least a dozen campuses, and they isolate three individuals of these dozen campuses. They isolate three that are supposed to be these Soros fellows, as though those were major instigators, when there's every reason in the world for students across every campus in the world to be protesting against the slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza. So I regard this as a propaganda piece by focusing on, maybe they're right. Maybe these three are Soros fellows. But to me, it's puzzling. Why would George Soros be wanting to promote pro-Palestinian, anti-genocide protests here in the U.S.? Do you have thoughts about that, John?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it? And I'm thinking about Kent State. So go back to Kent State. They had National Guard. They fired upon protesting students or whatever. That was a big case back in, 69? Right around that time frame. But again, the CIA and the under deep state agencies in the United States, which are corrupt and very bad, are using the same scenarios over and over again. I don't know. Has anybody called Soros and asked him? You know what I mean? That's how I would do it. Let's verify it. Is that really happening? Where's the verification? So they're getting away with blanketly labeling and blaming it on one particular person that they're being paid all this money, like all the illegals coming through the border. And they say the same thing. Soros is paying for all this stuff. He's a rich man. Rothschild's even richer, or was richer, and now it's under his son. Why are these people getting supported, and is it really true? Yeah, I have to ask the same question. Is it really true? Or are they just like CIA just repeating the same scenario? So you go, well, gee, it's that Soros guy. Everybody knows that. How do we know? So it's questionable. Unrest throughout the country. It's a start.
Kent State was May 4th, 1970, John.
There you go.
I find this very disappointing. Information operation reporting. These protesters belong in jail. Governor Abbott cheers arrest of pro-Palestinian protesters at UT Austin. This disgusts me. Texas Governor Greg Abbott Wednesday declared that anti-Semitic college students at UT Austin protesting Israel's war on Gaza, really protesting genocide, belong in jail. insisting that any student taking part in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests should be expelled. To hell with him. Arrests being made right now will continue until the crowd disperses, Abbott said. The protesters belong in jail. Why? Why? Has he never heard of the First Amendment and our right to petition our government for redress of grievances? I mean, this is ridiculous. This is a governor of Texas. Anti-Semitism, he said, will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled. I say, he just demonstrated he's a world-class POS. Your thoughts, John?
Yeah, I agree. I keep looking at this stuff and looking at the patterns, and that's what I do is I try to analyze these things. I know Jewish people. I know a Jewish American guy in Israel right now. I could email him or Facebook message him. Messenger's up for me right now. And then I talk to people all over the world. I used to have Telegram, but I got blocked off that because I reported something. But I wanted to go back to what I was trying to finish was when you see the protests at any of the major universities, that is the beginning of people getting on with learning how to do protests in the old-fashioned way. A lot of people forgot their First Amendment right. So what they're doing is they're doing it one way or another, good or bad. It helps to look at, make the American people look at it and go, wait a minute, we could do that. Maybe those guys are right. Maybe they have something. It's going to start a spark that may catch on throughout the country, and that's what they're doing. I see that as a pattern. You see it at the major universities in New York, Washington, D.C., California, maybe even in other states, and it'll start working across the country. And I don't see any bricks being stocked up yet. You know, like
here's D.C. Here's a tweet by Max Blumenthal, turns out to be a good guy. The Texas Department of Public Safety Police, which failed the children at Uvalde, that, of course, is another staged event, are now brutalizing American kids at UT Austin on behalf of the genocidal, child-slaughtering government of apartheid Israel and its local stooges. Absolute losers. Let me play this. Showing them, beating them up, taking them into custody. Big crowd there, big crowd. John, I'll just say, if you want to radicalize young people of America, this is the way to do it. How disgusting. Your
exactly.
Thoughts?
Exactly. I mean, even when I was Secret Service, we handled protests. I was recounting to a technician in the Philippines just in the last half hour before I got on the show, was that I protected personally the Philippine embassy. They had 1,000 people out there, but they were being calm. They were being cooperative. They had a petition to present. And I go, great, great. It's working out fine. If it got worse, then they'd have to call in people with nightsticks or something. But remember that one I told you about the Iranian students? Those guys got violent and Secret Service got bloody. They don't talk about it. They don't put it out in publicity. They quash those stories real quick. But there were guys coming back wiping their nightsticks off, you know, when they were the uniform division. And I said, well, it got that bad? Yeah, it did. And that's the Iranian students. But sometimes the Iranian students are a bunch of agitators or splinter groups intentionally protesting in this country when they don't even belong here. So you have outside agitators encouraging other people, just to point that out. So,
Let me say, I'm very pro-Iran. I've been to Iran. Iran is the most peaceful, great nation in the world. It hasn't launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775. So, John, we may have a difference in our interpretation. I think the Iranians are good guys. The Russians are good guys. The U.S. Good. And Israel are the bad.
Got it. Well, no, I agree with you because I've seen some stuff going on behind the scenes. And I've talked to a mutual friend, Scott Bennett. He's been around, and I didn't know you went over there either. But the point is, I've had contacts from all walks of life, other countries. I had people on another show from Russia my buddy Nick over in Paris, France, and we had people from Russia. I was the only guy to have anybody from Russia on the show during the conflicts. But if you remember, the Iranian, what is it, the guard, the IRG or whatever the acronym, shot down a plane of young people. I'm not sure if they're all students or they were just leaving the country. Somebody shot them down with a rocket. That was the most atrocious thing I heard after that. And then they had their own students and young people out protesting, which was rightfully so. So,
John, you got to watch. There's a lot of propaganda. There are a lot of illicit acts. I wouldn't be surprised if the Israelis had shot down a plane to blame it on Iran. I mean, that's what they do. They are the liars, the phonies, and the cheats, not the Iranians.
No, I agree with you. Anything is possible. I mean, I worked protecting those embassies and the Israeli embassy, and I would watch this guy on a midnight shift. And this guy would come out to go check the wheels on his on a car all the time. That's a ploy. He's going out to look around, pretend like he's checking something. The whole place is lit up with cameras that you can't see because you got national security, FBI, all these other agencies. And this guy goes out and I say, hey, how come you keep going out to check your car? I'm standing right here. Nobody's touching the car. There's nobody walking around. Maybe he suspects somebody went and put a bomb under it or something.
Yeah, sure.
But it's like going back to the Twin Towers. Mossad was allegedly involved, and then later they were, more and more. They were in there doing thermite charges, and that goes back there too. And there was a Jewish guy that, what's his name, the owner of the building, decided to get insurance before the actual attack. And he benefited, what, $4 or $5 billion or something. And people were allegedly saying, yeah, there's a bunch of Israelis out there jumping up and down, cheering the explosion in a parking lot, on a raised parking lot somewhere.
We'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, John, you were talking about 9/11, which, of course, was an Israeli op. We had more than 200 Mossad agents masquerading as art students in New York City alone. You're talking about five of them who were observed in Liberty State Park. They were filming the destruction of the World Trade Center, in particular the Twin Towers, taking high fives and selfies. They were observed by neighbors who thought their behavior was suspicious, and arrested in a van from Urban Moving Systems, which was an Israeli asset. They had passports, they had box cutters, they had residue of explosives in the van. And when the officer approached, the driver said, "We are not the problem. Your problem is our problem. The problem is the Palestinians," which, of course, was all ridiculous. They were actually arrested and held for around 44 days until Michael Chertoff, who was at the Department of Justice at the time and a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, released them, and they went back to Israel. And three of them went on Israeli TV and explained how they'd been there to document the event, which, of course, meant prior knowledge. But then the whole thing originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu and Ehud Olmert in the late 1980s, about the time of the dissolution of the Soviet Union, to create a scenario that would require a response by the United States of entering the Middle East and exerting military and diplomatic influence outward from that geopolitically sensitive region. I mean, it was outrageous how the event was brought to us, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. But originated with Bibi Netanyahu. And yes, 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 Larry Silverstein, who's a personal friend of Bibi Netanyahu, they spoke every Sunday by phone, came into possession of the World Trade Center just 6 weeks before he immediately fired the security firm that had been maintaining the security since it first opened in 1970 and replaced it with an Israeli firm, and then renegotiated his insurance coverage to include an anti-terrorism clause, claiming double indemnity because allegedly there had been two planes and therefore two attacks, and pocketed $4.5 billion on $114 million investment. So you're on the right track.
Yeah, I agree with you. You said some really good information here, because Back to those connections with these Israelis over there in that area. So people, we've had this ingrained in our backgrounds since we were around to believe certain people are good, certain people are bad, and now we're finding out the opposite. These people are coming up again, the boogeyman, and they're conflicting groups. I mean, I watched this general from the IDF. He seems to be honest and sincere, but they've known about the tunnels for years. But yet, on the other part of it, they're having all these other bombs going off and terrorist activities. Why would they make such a big deal about Afghanistan and put so much activity over there and money, taxpayer slave money, $85 billion, and then just pick up and leave? Why is it so important? Or is it cobalt and lithium for batteries? You know, so we're going to go invade a country for their natural resources. And then they took all this other stuff back to the Twin Tower thing. Building seven. How'd that go down? You know, that it's obvious. But Bush was involved. Bush had to be involved. Dick Cheney had to be involved. All these people had to be involved. And yet, it's going back to FDR. It reminds me, because of the research I was doing on Amelia Earhart, FDR, the Japanese were encroaching on the islands. And then she allegedly got captured. There's a book by Mike Campbell I recommend people get about Amelia Earhart. The truth at last, just to throw that out there, it's really good. It's got a lot of really good resources. But FDR knew about these encroachments all the way up to Pearl Harbor, and still they had communications from the Japanese through the Japanese embassy that were intercepted. They knew it was going to happen, and they let it happen. That's the same type of scenario. You know, let it happen. Then we've got the American public support. Therefore, they can go spend billions of dollars or trillions right now. And it's just, it's like going up in their faces right now with Ukraine, Gaza. We have boots on the ground in Haiti. I just talked to a guy from Haiti yesterday who delivered my water. He spent 4 years in Mexico to learn Spanish. So if he comes across to deliver water, you have to give him directions in Spanish. Nice guy, but he had an asylee status, and they do a fast track. He hasn't got his green card yet, but he delivers water as a driver for Walmart. They get 10 bucks for a delivery or something. Does that make sense? I mean, we're inviting these people in from all the countries. That's what these Democrats are doing. They've got much worse plans going on. They'll tear us down and say build back better, just now, like the bridge that got hit.
Here's a good piece from Common Dreams, which is another left-wing website. Bernie Sanders to Netanyahu. It is not anti-Semitic to hold you accountable. Please do not insult the intelligence of the American people by attempting to distract us from the immoral and illegal war policies of your extremist and racist government, said the Vermont senator to Israel's prime minister. Jewish U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders issued a scathing statement Thursday, pushing back against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's characterization of burgeoning protests on American university campuses as anti-Semitic, declaring, "It is not anti-Semitic to hold you accountable for your action. No, Mr. Netanyahu, it is not anti-Semitic or pro-Hamas to point out that in a little over 6 months, your extremist government has killed 34,000 Palestinians and wounded more than 77,000, 70% of whom are women and children," said Sanders. "It is not anti-Semitic to point out that your bombing has completely destroyed more than 221,000 housing units in Gaza, leaving more than 1 million people homeless, almost half the population. Anti-Semitism is a vile and disgusting form of bigotry that has done unspeakable harm to many millions," continued Sanders, "who lost family members to the Nazi Holocaust. That's a whole nother story. But please do not insult the intelligence of the American people by attempting to distract us from the immoral and illegal war policies of your extremist and racist government. Do not use anti-Semitism to deflect attention from the criminal indictment you are facing in the Israeli courts." I like that, John. I think Bernie did it right.
Yeah, that's a really good prophetic statement, because it's like you and I agree on that. I mean, it's really perfectly clear. But they always seem to get away with stuff because they play the race card, the Jewish card, whatever. And people, "Oh, no, you can't deny the Holocaust." I know a case where that happened, and it was related to somebody that lived next to Ted Gunderson's daughter up in the L.A. area. She married a Jewish guy, so I guess she had to convert or whatever, however that works. Usually that's how it does. And it was a guy named Nicholas Gruner, who was Hungarian Jewish or whatever. He was put in Auschwitz, and the guy, Elie Wiesel, made all kinds of money based on the fact that he claimed that he was there during that time frame, and the guy didn't match up. Oprah Winfrey had him on several years ago before he died, took him out to a visit to Auschwitz. I'm telling you, if I was at Auschwitz, I wouldn't want to go back, even to look at it, you know. But he never had the tattoo. So you can pull up a website on that. He never had the tattoo. So how'd that work? So
yeah,
one lie after another. Go ahead.
Right. Here we have this is also from Common Dreams, so I like their publishing these. This Holocaust survivor. Again, we know the whole thing about the Holocaust is a gross exaggeration, fabrication. I've spoken about this many times. You can find my work on it for a short take. Go to The Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump, Science, which you can find on thegovernmentrag.com and also at jameshfetzer.org. Holocaust survivor tells student anti-genocide protester, just keep doing it. There's a question of historical responsibility toward injustice, genocide, and fascism, said Stephen Kapos. If you are indifferent, if you do not take a stand, you acquire a degree of guilt. A Holocaust survivor opposed to Israel's war on Gaza on Wednesday told U.S. student protesters they're on the right side of history and that the global wave of demonstrations against the slaughter and starvation of Palestinians will soon force Western leaders to face up to their complicity in genocide. Stephen Kapos, 86, was 7 years old in 1944 when he was separated from his family during the Nazi extermination of Jews in his native Hungary. Most of his family was murdered in the Holocaust, but Kapos survived and moved to the United Kingdom after the 1956 Soviet invasion of Hungary. Kapos is part of a small group of Shoah survivors and their descendants who demonstrate disagreements with the use of the Holocaust experience as a cover by the Zionists and the State of Israel. They attend protests wearing signs around their necks reading, "This Holocaust survivor says stop the genocide in Gaza." As a Holocaust survivor, my message to the brave student protesters in America is just keep doing it. Don't give up. Kapos said in video published by Double Down News, "We're doing exactly the same, and in the long term, we are going to prevail." Here's a video.
As a Holocaust survivor, my message to the brave student protesters in America is just keep doing it. Don't give up. We are doing exactly the same. And in the long term, we are going to prevail. I'm out from the beginning at every march. A small group of survivors and descendants of survivors demonstrate disagreement with the use of the Holocaust experience as a cover by the Zionists and the State of Israel.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s.
The way that the Israeli government is using the memory of the Holocaust in order to justify what they are doing to the Gazans is a complete insult to the memory of the Holocaust. And we stand repeated in the last few demos carrying placards hanging from the neck saying this survivor of the Holocaust is against the genocide in Gaza. And we also demonstrate against the conflating of Jewishness with Zionism, which is what the Israeli state is trying to do, which does nothing else but increases anti-Semitism. So we are trying to counter that by demonstrating that Jews and Holocaust survivors are against that. We have tremendously warm reception and appreciation from the typical members of the march. We get handshakes and hugs, and some people stand and some women cry seeing the placards. It's a great and warm experience. When the right-wing section of the present government is trying to press for the banning of these marches on the grounds that they create no-go areas for Jews and they are anti-Semitic, we know that this is complete rubbish. And the very opposite is true. Today's marches are having a very hopeful aspect that it is so large, so persistent, so global that eventually the Western leadership, which are trying to deny what is actually going on, will be forced to face up to it. And I think we are not far from that. I think there was no parallel to that in the Jewish Holocaust experience. In fact, there was great abandonment, certainly from the leadership of the country. There were some, very few, very brave people who risked everything to be on the right side of history and to to rescue as much as possible. But the majority of people were too afraid and looked the other way. There is a question of historic responsibility towards injustice, genocide, and fascism. If you are just indifferent, if you do not take a stand, you acquire a degree of guilt without any doubt. And I think it is imperative to assert opposition and even at some degree of disadvantage and risk, if you want to.
Very good. I'm impressed with that statement. John, your thoughts?
It sounds good to me. I didn't say anything wrong with it. That was the easy way out right there, right? As you say, we have a different perspective in the fact that most Americans don't have our perspective. They don't have our knowledge. And I've traveled and I've protected embassies of all the countries in Washington, D.C. and at the White House, came into contact with protesters. I made a few arrests, stuff like that. But when I see this stuff going on all across the country, it seems to you see the same patterns over and over. You know, they're going to create a problem. All those people are dying. They're out there bulldozing everything under. All those buildings that they destroyed in the bombing raids and stuff is being destroyed. And I always ask the question. I said, wait a minute. If they really wanted to go after the Muslims, they would destroy Mecca. They would destroy the Kaaba stone location. If they wanted to destroy something in Israel, they claim that they would rather go down. They would go after the whole city of Israel and Jerusalem, because that's like the religious capital of all the religions right there. That hasn't happened, but they want to keep it intact for themselves. And you know the story about the Rock of the Golden Dome. Accordingly to their belief system, what they're saying is we're at the time right now when they're getting ready to sacrifice the golden heifers. They have to somehow, the Golden Dome or the Rock of the Golden Dome building has to be destroyed to start the third temple. The Al-Aqsa building just next to it or just south of it, right next to that building, has been destroyed. And I thought, oh my God, that's close. Maybe that's interpreted through their Bible and Torah differently. But we're at the precipice of this activity where if the Rock of the Golden Dome gets destroyed, which is occupied by the Muslims, then that will start over the new temple that the Jewish Hebrew priests or rabbis are ready to take over and start all over again, which gets into the other religious things about the tribulation and the second coming of Christ and all these other prophetic activities.
Yes, 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 yes. You meant red heifer, not golden heifer. They got a hole.
Yeah.
I don't know. They may have to slaughter seven of them, but yeah, this would. This would create a religious war of a magnitude never before seen in history. Here's another comment.
One of the heifers has a seven on its forehead, by the way.
Has a seven on its forehead.
Yeah, I'd have to send you a picture, but they had like at least 2 to 4 heifers. One of them had a marking.
But it's supposed to be all red. I mean,
yeah, you're correct. You're correct. But on another heifer that they were going to use, they showed markings. These are previous prophetic signs.
John, here's another Common Dreams article. I'm very impressed with what Common Dreams is doing over this issue. Very impressed. The students involved here, by the way, are not fools, and they understand, and they have resources. I think the government's making a huge mistake in cracking down on them. Columbia students file civil rights complaint after arrest, National Guard threat. The violent repression we're facing as peaceful anti-war protesters is appalling. I agree. A day after, Columbia University officials warned it may call on the National Guard to remove nonviolent student protesters who've been occupying Bambus Law since last week in solidarity with Gaza. Advocacy group Palestinian Legal on Thursday filed a federal civil rights complaint demanding an investigation into the school's discriminatory treatment of Palestinian students and their allies. Good for them. The school discriminated against pro-Palestinian protesters last week when President Menushe Savak summoned New York Police Department officers in riot gear to arrest more than 100 students at Palestine Legal. The complaint details how the escalation against students who have set up an encampment on campus to demand Columbia divest from companies that work with the Israeli government and support calls for a ceasefire in Gaza is part of a month-long pattern of the university targeting pro-Palestinian students. According to Palestine Legal, students of all backgrounds who have demanded an end to Israel's U.S.-backed massacre of Palestinians in Gaza have been the target of extreme anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic harassment, including receiving multiple death threats, being harassed for wearing kafak or hijabs, doxed, stereotyped, treated differently by high-ranking administrators, including Shafak, in an attack with a chemical agent that led to at least 10 students requiring hospitalization and dozens of others, including a Palestinian student seeking medical attention and more. John, I think they're on the right track. I applaud this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking out loud here. I've been monitoring that stuff and contacting people over there. I got a guy right now, I'm trying to get him on Facebook, who's over there in Israel. And, of course, my other buddy Nick's in Paris. There it is. He hasn't responded, the guy in Israel. But the last time he said, those demonstrators were organized and paid for by the Iranian government, the IRGC. Oh, wow. What do you think about that?
I've told you, I don't think it's true. I think it's bullshit.
Okay, let me see what else he said.
Iran does not do that. I can't begin to tell you. The Iranians are honorable people. It's the Israelis. It's the scroungers. It's like the Soroses and others. But why would Soros be supporting anti-Israel protests? Now, the suggestion is made because he wants to bring about chaos in America.
Yeah,
and one could make that line of argument, but it seems very damn peculiar. Here we have a piece, by the way, from Zero Hedge, Divide and Conquer.
Let me read a comment from him that's on a message I got like yesterday or a day or so ago. He says, the United Nations are only ever united when they are condemning Israel, and their recognition of a terror state only shows how distant they are from God of Abraham. The next comment, for my part, this is my friend in Israel, American guy. He says he does not understand why Israel bothers to even send a representative to the UN. They are an obsolete organization, and one day they will be ejected from New York after the people there wake up. We are safe, and I live near a military base up the road 100 meters. That's him in Israel. I'm not sure about if you understand the part about the United Nations thing, because I'm beginning to think some of that stuff's probably true, because what are they doing? Sanctions. Look,
the United Nations has issued a demand that Israel cease the genocide, a demand. Yeah. That has a status of international law. The Israelis have completely ignored it, and the Americans have pretended it's a non-binding resolution when it's precisely the opposite. So I'm quite disgusted with Israel and the United States when the United Nations has perfectly properly, on the basis of an abundance of evidence, determined that a genocide is taking place in Israel, just as has the International Court of Justice, and issued a demand that it cease, which they are ignoring. I mean, John, this is so clear cut. This is a morally definitive issue, in my opinion. Now, here we have it. Go ahead.
What are we going to do? I mean, we got Congress members and senators, even at my own personal level, trying to get help, and yet they're passing the bill, $95 billion to send for aid over there. At the same time, our country has actually sent aid to terrorist groups. That's a fact. Lindsey Graham and John McCain went over, and there's pictures of them meeting with, take your favorite list, ISIS or whatever, and they're giving them money. So they're getting taxpayers' money in the United States, and we can't do anything about it. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't work. Or we're all under control, like back in the feudal system.
Here's a piece by Mike Adams. He did this for Real Deal Media, talking about passing the bill and why it went forward so rapidly.
Stephen K. Bannon here. Look, now that we've hit the debt ceiling, is going to be absolutely incredible as far as...
Hey, guys, Donald Trump Jr. here. Let me ask you.
Several ads before I could get to there.
That's because the...
Here we go.
All right, this is Mike Adams here, a special exclusive report for Dean Ryan's Real Deal Media. And various sources are confirming that the reason there was such a panic in the U.S. Congress to pass this new spending bill, weapons for Ukraine, is because the U.S. military had already pre-sent tens of billions of dollars of weapon systems and missiles and to Ukraine, and that they had already burned through most of it. And the U.S. domestic supply was almost completely depleted, and it was violations of domestic law, and a lot of high-level military people were about to go to jail if they didn't replenish the supplies. Everybody had to bend the rules and fudge documents and counterfeit, you know, records and everything in order to make that happen. So this money is actually not going to get Ukraine any more weapons. It's just going to refill some of the U.S. domestic supply for the most part. But that's going to take time. And between now and then, which is going to be 1 to 2 years easily, the U.S. has run out of ammo to a large extent, which means the U.S. is extremely vulnerable right now domestically to any kind of a domestic terrorism, domestic sabotage, attack by, you know, China or whoever, or activation of the illegals that came across the border that are going to, of course, attack and sabotage the infrastructure when they're given the go. So we are now more vulnerable than anybody could have imagined.
Stand by. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I think that little clip from Mike Adams is extremely telling. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he hasn't nailed it, that the Pentagon had already sent over all this, all these weapons, all this equipment. They'd already been consumed. That our own stocks right here in America are basically depleted in our enthusiasm to support the most corrupt country in the world's attempt to hold off Russia seeking to defend the people of the Donbass, whom they were about to slaughter as thoroughly as the Israelis are slaughtering the Palestinians in Gaza. That was what initiated the timing of the special military operation. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm understanding all this perfectly. And I was going back on all these other research projects I've been doing over the years. You know, you can see the earmarks for it. But we're still not being told the truth. And if people constantly had that filter on in their brain when they see this information, when the Department of Defense puts out their briefings, Austin puts out his briefings, and then we got ex-generals going on there. Kempler is another, Kempler, I think, is another one. He goes on Fox News. I'm still reconstructing my laptop because I had manually put in all these tabs, but I'd monitor these news services all the time. They're sending NATO's forces as close to the Ukrainian border next to Russia. So that means they're monitoring all the electronics. They're dropping off all kinds of food and supplies and so forth everywhere they can. But even Russia was also sending supplies to the Gaza Strip area, and they were trying to make it look like a negative thing. They said, no, Putin was doing that too. Putin was sending supplies down there to help those people because they're refugees. And they're just, they need food, water, and shelter. What are you going to do? I mean, that's a national, international type of a project that the Red Cross would do. Same thing the United Nations is supposed to do. And you just don't see much of the activity. But they're always trying to twist it to their advantage. You know, they're always trying to play it up. And you know, they had all kinds of people that were putting up fake bombings and shootings and stuff to make it look like all this activity. And even the protests in March, marching and protesting in Paris, France. I talked to Nick Mancuso, a friend of mine, and I said, hey, how far away is that from you? Because he's near the Eiffel Tower on a routine basis. And he doesn't see that activity. So he says, no, that stuff's being put up in a single block or two, and that's it. So you see all this conflict, no different than Antifa went and took over Seattle for a month or so. And Trump was going to clear it out in an hour, but that never happened. But they have all these places set up. So you got to wonder. They're putting it all over the news. They put it on the news media. They sell it to the United States. Taxpayers are sitting there, tax slaves, supporting it because, oh, my God, we can't let that happen. We have to pay more money and give more money. And then Biden is just taking it out of our funds and shipping money over there and 10% off for him. It just goes on and on. It's a recycled. And then when people get tired of that conflict, they open up another conflict. We got boots on the ground in Haiti. I don't know. Marines are on the ground in Haiti. Nobody's talking about it. But if you go outside the news services, like I checked this thing. It's on a stream fair. It's for free. Fox. I don't look at CNN. I don't look at NPR. But I might go back and forth. You get Al Jazeera. I used to sign up for Al Jazeera, and you couldn't get it. I was being blocked. So I have to go through another service that's free to see what's going on over in the Middle East, in Europe, and all those other locations. India is another one, too. You can look at the news in India. But we're constantly being bombarded by this deep state CIA mentality where we're not getting the truth. Go ahead.
Yes, I think we all agree on that. Get this, and this is outrageous. This is April 24th, 2 days ago. Information Liberation Publishing. Mike Johnson pushes the debunk lie that Israeli babies were cooked in ovens on October 7th. This just boggles the mind. This guy is a Speaker of the House. He's supposed to be well-informed. He's not supposed to be promoting blatant propaganda. House Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday at Columbia University repeated the long debunked atrocity propaganda lie that Israeli babies were cooked in ovens by Hamas on October 7th. Israeli women and children were savagely raped and murdered, and infants were cooked in ovens, he claimed. Embarrassing. Here you got a video of him saying it.
Denied the horrific facts of September 11, 2001, the attacks on the United States that happened right here in New York City, and they've attempted to excuse or to ignore the barbaric attack of Hamas in Israel on October 7th, 2023, where Israeli women and children were savagely raped and murdered, and infants were cooked in ovens. Crowds of radical activists have chanted death to America and on our own streets in this country, and some public officials have refused to condemn them. Others...
This guy is ridiculous. I mean, this is embarrassingly bad. This is a Speaker of the House of Representatives repeating Israeli propaganda long since debunked. John, I find that appalling.
Yeah, I got on some of the news sources I was checking. That's part of the propaganda. When they start telling you that they're doing that, I've got something a little bit extreme. Because I've released information to news people that don't want to do the story about the military detention disposal camps in the United States and other countries where they take children. Now, that gets into the adrenochrome story, but nobody wants to touch it. You see what I mean? It's that dangerous or that risky that even other people. I don't know if you I won't mention names, but there were some other people that actually had contacts with other parts of the White House, like I worked there. But they were afraid to touch it. So they don't want it out that they've got these things with the children that they're using for their body parts or sexual-related material or the adrenochrome. And by saying that they're doing the same thing that the atrocities that they did like in World War II with the Nazis. You know. And I sent you a little connected thing. There's a Jewish rabbi that's on one of these other alternate shows. And I'm going to mention his name. I had to scroll to it real quick, if I could. Hold on. Oh, it looks like it got removed or taken down. But they're indicating on some other alternate media about the Jews taking over, and it's a very Jewish thing. It's all propaganda. And they just keep recycling the same things. And then people fall for it. Oh, here it is. Brother Nathaniel. He looks like a Christian Jew. He's wearing the outfit of a Christian Jew. But he's very, very likable, you know.
We all know Brother Nathaniel, John. He's a very familiar figure. And he's a real spot-on truth teller. Go ahead. What did you want to? Did you want to play?
I wasn't sure if you knew him. I've seen him a couple of times. I like him a lot. He's very clear, very friendly guy. Puts out the information in a very. Sometimes he does a little twist on it, or maybe a little sarcasm. There's a website that says realjewnews.com. I said, really?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So. It's kind of like John, out in our face, and we're not reading it. We're not getting it. Most people.
Here's another report. This one from Mises Wire. Cowardice, not courage, led House Republicans to side with the Democrats. Over the weekend, House of Representatives passed four foreign aid bills that will allocate a combined $95 billion to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and other national security priorities, which do not include the U.S. border. House Republicans followed Speaker Mike Johnson's lead and joined with Democrats to deliver all the foreign aid President Joe Biden wanted without requiring much of anything in return. The passage came after House Republicans had handed the president similar victories with Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, reauthorization, and government spending, which, of course, allows warrantless wiretapping of the American people. New York Times columnist celebrated Speaker Johnson for, in their words, finally showing a spine. Columnist Brett Stevens went so far as to call Johnson's decision to roll over an act of courage. Quote, nothing is more difficult these days in American politics than going against your own ideological tribe. And nothing is more admirable than politicians who are willing to challenge their base and gamble their office for the sake of a great cause. I wasn't much of a fan of Johnson when he became Speaker of the House, but what he's done is a profile in courage. What bullshit! Speaker Johnson took a similar tone, framing himself as a courageous and selfless public servant, willing to do the right thing regardless of personal consequences. But Johnson didn't do the right thing, and he certainly didn't do the courageous thing. Outrageous. Just to praise this man for an act of cowardice, I'm disgusted, John.
Yeah, I'm wondering about his profile because we got rid of the other guy. He got out. I see a constant changing of the guard, so to speak. When they get certain congressmen and senators, Marjorie Taylor Greene was going to go after an impeachment thing again, and then she's getting stifled on it. And then Johnson, he's like he's going left or right, or maybe he plays all the fields. You know, it doesn't make sense. And yet they're passing these things with amendments to it. That's what the Democrats do, you know. They put an actual good bill, or a Republican will put a bill, but yet the Democrats will put a little amendment on a bill that has nothing to do with it. But if you pass that bill, it attaches the amendments to it so that they can squeeze some other propaganda type of bill in there.
Here are some very thoughtful reflections on the situation we're in from the same source. America is a global empire that spread too thin. Washington could have used its unipolar moment following the fall of the Soviet Union, which, of course, was in 1991, to relax the totalitarian military bureaucracy built up during the Cold War. Instead, the United States government launched multiple unnecessary wars in the Middle East, needlessly expanded the anti-Russian military alliance in Europe, and help militarize the waters and neighboring governments that surround China's coast. The U.S. meddling in the Middle East inadvertently swung the balance of power way in Iran's favor. In Europe, NATO's eastward expansion turned the Russian regime back into an enemy and eventually provoked Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. all the while China has maneuvered and worked to gain control of its own near abroad and to build up military force strong enough to back up that effort. Officials in Washington have decided that they are the ones who should be in charge of the entire Middle East, all of Eastern Europe, and the East Pacific. The American people have already been forced to pay trillions to sacrifice thousands of their sons, daughters, and siblings for this project. And Washington exerts even less control over those three regions than it did three decades ago. This is quite good, in my opinion, John.
Yeah, I'm just double-checking some of the news services right now. I agree with that information, but I'm trying to monitor. This is what I do. I'll look at Russia Today, Al Jazeera News, India News, and try to monitor anything we're not getting. Right now, you've got Austin up there, Secretary Department of Defense Austin, and they're talking about the latest updates on the war in Ukraine as U.S. aid arrives. So I go, there you go. They're letting people know they're doing it right in your face. It's almost satanic. You know, we're taking the money, we're taking the aid, and we're putting it over here. How do we know that? See, we don't have people on the ground to actually prove or see it, but that's what they're putting out. That's a Pentagon briefing going on right now. Sorry about that. That wasn't supposed to come up. That was just some tab. Sorry. Go ahead.
What's taking place at a Pentagon briefing right now, John? Did you?
Hold on. Yeah, I just clicked onto it. I'm getting the news thing advertised. Hold on a second. These damn computers. I got hacked into and they readjusted my settings and it's crazy. Other people are probably going to experience the same. Hold on, let me turn it on for a second. I'll turn the sound.
Well, tell me what's going on. Sure.
Yeah, they're talking about the aid that's actually arriving in Ukraine.
Yeah, but it's already, as Mike Adams was explaining, the weaponry had already been sent. In fact, it's already even been consumed. So this is not going to bring any new weapons to Ukraine. And in fact, they have already been defeated. We have one expert source after another, whether it's Scott Ritter or Colonel McGregor or Colonel Wilkerson, everyone knows the war is lost. And the idea, therefore, of sending more weapons or money to Ukraine for a lost cause is really pathetic, incredibly stupid and short-sighted in my judgment.
That's why it looks like propaganda and a lie, you see. If they claim they're still sending weapons and stuff and it's already been over, then that's the lie that they want to keep continuing to say, oh, yeah, we're spending millions of dollars in equipment. We're sending it over there. And they're just funneling money. It's another money laundering operation. These guys are literally up there telling lies. So
here's an interesting report. J.D. Vance compares today's Ukraine talking points to the propaganda used to justify the Iraq war. I think he's on to something. Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, whom Trump apparently is now considering as a vice presidential running mate, tore into the Senate appropriation of $95 billion to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan during a speech to the chamber earlier this week. He compared the narrative of the propaganda used to draw America into the war with Iraq. History believes it is repeating itself, and it's repeating itself on the same level of incompetence when it comes to dealing with the region. There's another historical analogy I think is worth pointing out, and that is the historical analogy of the early 2000s that railed. Now, in 2003, I was a high school senior, and I had a political position back then. I believe the propaganda of the George W. Bush administration that we needed to invade Iraq, that it was a war for freedom and democracy, that those who were appeasing Saddam Hussein were inviting a broader regional conflict. Does that sound familiar to anything we're hearing today? It's the same exact talking point 20 years later with different names. But have we learned anything over the past 20 years? No, I don't think we have. Here's a clip. Not playing. I think Vance has got it right, of course. It is recycling. It turns out the CIA is calling an awful lot of these shots, by the way, far more than the American public realizes, including even, it appears, that attack on the concert hall in Moscow. That appears to have been a CIA planned op. Turns out, by the way, that Biden has sent long-range missiles to Ukraine. This I find very, very disturbing. Political Insider reports, Biden sent secret shipments of long-range missiles to Ukraine, which were used against Russia. Politico reported Wednesday the Biden admin had secretly shipped long-range missiles to Ukraine and that Kiev had used them in their ongoing war with Russia. Ukraine has long sought weapons that can strike deep inside of Russia, which critics argue could severely escalate the conflict. No kidding? How much deeper can America get in this war? Here we have a tweet. Next, Ukraine in March secretly received more than 100 ATACMS missiles with a range of 300 kilometers and a large number of cluster munitions. The New York Times has quoted its sources as saying, it regarded the missiles Ukraine received hit military airfields in various locations. Here we are with an image. It hit a military airfield in Zhukovka, destroying Russian S-300 and S-400 systems. That's not good. Bad, bad, bad. In fact, all these efforts could very easily expand the war in ways that are going to be very bad for the American people. On the other hand, there's plenty of evidence the war is lost, as I've been reporting, where Ukraine is depending upon untrained soldiers. Here's a discussion about it.
On sort of how you see this having an impact.
I'm a bit of an outlier here because I categorically say there is no chance that this can change the outcome of the war and that it will only have a minimal, even delaying effect on the battlefield. So I don't even think that there's a path to a defensive strategy that has any possibility of outlasting Russia in any capacity. And the reason is very clear on the manpower issue. Russia not only has more men by millions, and they certainly do, but they also have more trained men because they actually did something that I advocated strongly that Ukraine do in the early part of the war, which is that they should have taken a large chunk of men, like 100,000, moved them out of contact, start to train them up over between a year to 18 months if they could possibly, you know, hold that much patience, and then have a defensive strategy that would give when it needed to, but only to buy time for these guys to go on an offensive so that they had a credible offensive force that was equipped, maintained, and trained. The critical part there is having a trained force. They didn't do that. They tried to do it on the cheap, and they did it quickly. They trained very minimally, and in the 2023, they lost the vast majority of everybody that even had trained up prior to the war and most of those that had trained afterwards. So right now, you don't have to have trained much at all to be able to hold a trench line. You can train a guy for 2 or 3 weeks and teach him how to shoot, and he can hold a trench line. But he can't conduct even active defense on that line. When you take a look at what's actually been offered in this $61 billion, the vast majority, according to the Secretary of Defense, who celebrated this, that $50 billion or so of that is actually going back into the American system here. And only $13.8 billion was directly estimated to go to Ukraine. And in the first package, which I think has just been announced just hours ago by the Department of Defense, there's a $1 billion drawdown package. And it's a long list of stuff. I mean, it's got Bradleys, it's got 105 millimeter, 155 millimeter, all kinds of stuff, and a bunch more beyond that. Only $1 billion, which means you're getting just a handful of any one of these things. Right now, Mike, there is a 600-mile front, and Russia is on the move in almost every bit of that. At least 5 or 6 key points in there, they're on the move and making significant gains in recent days even. Now that it used to be, you know, a few meters per day, now that they're getting half a kilometer, a kilometer per day, they're making much more rapid progress because the Ukraine side is not just running low on ammunition, which it is, but they're also running short of trained manpower. They're running short of mines. That's a recent development I haven't seen many talk about in the Western media, is that the minefields that Russia used to break the teeth of the Ukrainian offensive last year had been used by many places by the Ukrainians on their side, but they're running so low on them. Now, all of a sudden, we're starting to see maneuver by the Russian side because there's not enough mines to channel them into areas. And that is an alarming development, because if Russia starts moving larger scale, because they don't have to go inch by inch with men on the ground like Russia or Ukraine tried to do, now then they're actually advancing in armored vehicles and then putting them on the other side. That can't be sustained on the Ukraine side. This defensive this package right here has been hailed today by President Biden as being decisive. It's going to defend democracy. It's going to in our national interest. Only it's not going to make any fundamental difference on the battlefield, because you can't print men. Why I'm so confident in my negative impression of what's going to happen is because Russia has learned a lot in the last 2+ years, and they're showing it on the battlefield now, and they're conducting much more cooperative combined arms operations. They're putting their men at less risk. There's these reports every day I see, every day, that Russia's losing 900, 1,000 men per day. But I don't see any evidence of it on the battlefield at all. I think that's just kind of, we're trying to make ourselves feel better. But the reality is that Russia is imposing significant casualties on these defenses, and that's why they keep falling back, because they have these new FAB bombs. They have substantially 5 to 10 times more artillery in any area than the Ukraine side does. The drones are much more effective on the Russian side. Electronic warfare is knocking down reportedly 80% of the Ukrainian drones. So even though the numbers may be close, the effectiveness is way over on the Russian side. And then you have the air power, air defense. Everything you can imagine is in the Russian favor. The industrial capacity is just overwhelming and continuing to grow. And this little package here of $61 billion is not going to change those dynamics.
Here's an easy thing you can do.
I think that was as good an overview as we're going to have of the current situation in Ukraine. Very, very good. I am opening the lines for callers right after this break. We'll take your calls. Stand by.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the line is open for your calls. The number 608-957-8727, 608-957-8727. We already have two callers standing by. Area code 406. Join the conversation, 406.
Yeah, Jim, it's Keith here.
Keith, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I was going to just throw a few things in there, as I mentioned earlier. You know, the fact that $30 billion would solve world hunger for a year tells you exactly what's going on. That aid package, $4 billion of that goes to NGOs for the border, which generally most of those NGOs are Jewish organizations that are accepting these immigrants in. What gets me is across this country, we have violent crime, people getting punched in the face. They've stood down the law enforcement, defund the police and stuff. And yet, when it comes to these painful protests, suddenly there's hundreds of cops everywhere. They case the streets and stuff. They can't stop the thefts of retail stores and stuff. But the minute Israel calls, it just goes to show you who controls this country.
That's a hell of a great point, Keith. Yes, yes, yes. There are no cops on the streets to stop the looting or the crime or the assault and batteries or even more serious offenses taking place right and left. But when there's a protest against Israel, all of a sudden they're to be found everywhere in superabundance. That's a hell of a good point, Keith. I like that.
Well, it's a shame. And the same thing with Zelensky over there. You know, you're another one. You know, we have the kosher bandit over there. I watched a video of a rail car bringing in brand new BMWs for Ukraine. This is where your tax dollars are going.
Yeah. Brand new BMWs. Those are really going to help defeat the Russians, aren't they, Keith? You know how Russians fear seeing BMWs on the streets of Kiev.
Yeah. And another thing, I sent a video to you, I mean a photo there, but they actually show, and it was labeled something about Kent State, because that's the first thing I thought of, is to see snipers on top of college buildings. Here in America, I mean, what has this country come to that they would be willing to shoot Americans just to make the Israelis could continue their genocide?
Yes. Yes. How insane is that? John, would you like to add a comment on Keith's observations?
Yeah, he's on target. Just for the break, the same gentleman was stating the same thing. There's no evidence of these activities where they're in the Ukraine or any other locations. Right now I'm monitoring the IDF allegedly strikes two Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon. Okay, that's on the news right now. People can go to thestreamfair.com. They can pull up a dozen different news sources at the same different time, how many screens you've got. But I'm telling people right now, this is all part of PSYOPs where they're telling you they've got these activities going on. They will go out and find a burning car or make a burning car and gut it out and have a news guy standing there. Yeah, here is a very horrific bombing of a car that they're taking out Hezbollah or not. And the thing about the Beamers, that really hit close. Where's my Beamer? You know, I need a Beamer too. But the money, it's a money scam. That's what they do all the time. Yeah, we need money in the Democrat coffers here, so let's start another war. Go ahead.
Eric, we also have a call from Mary, code 816. 816, caller, join the conversation.
Yeah, Jim, when you guys talked about Soros funding the anti-war movement, that would be just like them. That's what they do. They infiltrate from within. They would get their people and they'd say, okay, you're going to pretend to be these anti-war people. Get in there and find out who the real leaders are so we can take them out. And then they can also use their fake leaders to control things. You know, that's just how they work. So, you know, and it's through history. So they always infiltrate from within, whether it's the Hitler's National Socialists, you know, as I pointed out before, but this is for John. Hitler's niece dated his bodyguard chauffeur, who was a Jew. Okay, if Hitler hated Jews, why would he allow this? And also, the father of the Nazi thing was a Jew named Alfred Rosenberg. The person who owned Auschwitz-Birkenau was a Jew, Warburg. So the head of the Abwehr, which was German intelligence, was a Greek Jew named Canaris. So, you know, we just get such total BS everywhere. And the other thing that I'd like to mention is the fact that I just read yesterday about a deputy Minister of Defense for Russia named Ivanov, who was arrested. Okay. Well, that right there raises red flags with me, because I think of Alan Grayson. I think of Traficant. You know, they were against the Federal Reserve. So suddenly they're arrested. And I know that Prochigin was part of the deep state. He was Chabad like Zelensky. And he was complaining because the Russian army knew what he was up to when they were killing off these Ukrainians. They were working together to do that. And someone in Russia took him out, Prochigin. And what worries me is maybe Ivanov was behind that. And once the deep state figures it out, oh, suddenly you're going to be charged with crimes. That's how they work. They control all the press all over the world, and it's showing in Russia, because you don't hear them talking about 9/11 to their public. They don't want that 100th monkey syndrome, where if too many people around the world know, then everybody wakes up. And you know, that's how they work. You could Al Jazeera, doesn't matter who it is. Who controls them is the deep state. So that's Keith, what I have to say.
Keith, you want to respond to Brian's observations?
Well, right now there's several arrests over there in Russia right now, which I kind of had to laugh at, because Russia's cracking down on government crime from those that were trying to make profit off of this conflagration over there. And like I say, they're not having it. It's very, very serious. And what another thing that gets me about this entire thing is the amount of hubris that we have. Like last night, there was a massive Hezbollah strike on an IDF position, which was concentrating for this move into Rafah. And Israeli media did a blackout on it. I only watched a short video that showed, like, I'm not sure, it was nighttime, so I don't know what type of weapons was used like that, but there was this, like, say, a fairly large gathering of IDF, and Hezbollah directly targeted them like that, and I guess there was a lot of deaths out of that. So,
excellent, excellent. That's terrific. I'm delighted to hear that, Keith. I'm delighted to hear that, because this Rafah thing is going to be an unprecedented slaughter if it takes place.
Yeah, one other thing is, when someone says Iran is financing something, remember, Iran is under massive sanctions.
Yes.
Their money is crippled.
Yes.
So
the rest of them are frozen. So how the hell can they be financing anything? I agree with you. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Not only did they not have the motive, they don't have the means. So that's a really good one. I like that, Keith.
Yeah.
John.
All right, well, that's all I have to say again.
Good. John, you want to add anything here?
Yeah, I'm monitoring the news while we're listening and talking here. Hundreds of protesters across the United States. So every campus that's a major campus, you got people dressing up. They're putting on their own hijabs and stuff and scarves or whatever so they can imitate being Jewish or Palestinian so they can have protests. At the same time, we're building a pier over there in Gaza. Are you aware of the pier building?
Yeah, of course.
That's a new one. So if you have a pier, you can draw ships and bring them in so they can offload container ships. Go ahead.
Oh, no, Jim, I think they're going to use them, actually. I think they're going to use them to deport Palestinians. They want to bring them to America. They want to get them anywhere but in Palestine. Keith, go ahead. Keith.
Well, I forgot to mention, this college protest is sweeping Europe also. I saw three different countries last night there. So, again, this is a movement they didn't want to get going, and that's why they wanted it squashed immediately.
Yes. But it ain't working, and I praise the students to the sky. They're doing the right thing. Very impressed. Brian, your thoughts about the student protests?
Well, yeah, it's good. It's not working. And, you know, people are just starting to wake up, and hopefully the Jews won't be able to get their people in those movements and harness them and control them like they always do. So that's what I'm praying for. But I just have a feeling in my intuition that in May, things are going to really start blowing up. The dark are just going to start losing everywhere. We're going to see a different paradigm shift, I think, next month, because, you know, this whole red heifer thing, everything they were doing with the eclipse, they were trying to start all this stuff for us to really be enslaved. And I'm sensing it failed, and the blowback is going to be horrendous for them. That's just my feeling. So,
well, that's interesting. Keith, would you pick up on what do you foresee in the immediate future, Keith?
Well, I see financial problems, massive, because if you know, well, yesterday when I was looking at the stock market, it was down 600 and something like that. But
right,
you have to realize that this entire thing about Russia, I watched a video here about a month ago about Gaddafi, about what led up to Gaddafi, you know, with the gold dinar and stuff, and why it was so imperative that they stopped. Of course, remember how much gold they've taken. You can actually research this. Ukraine loses its gold. Syria loses its gold. Libya loses its gold. Iraq loses its gold. Venezuela loses its gold. These guys are so corrupt like that, you know. And, of course, we have China and Russia. You know, yeah, we have China and Russia stockpiling their gold. The whole financial system is about to change. And Michael Hudson has really brought out some really good information about what's really going on. But they are not, you know, these kosher bandits are not going to allow China or Russia to bring in an alternate currency, i.e. the BRICS or any of that stuff like that. And they will use your children to fight as Ponzi's to control the world's currency supply.
Can I make a point?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Brian. The head of the Central Bank of Russia is a woman who's a member of the World Economic Forum. She's one of their global leaders. The problem I see with BRICS and no one is looking into it. But all of those people in those banks that are in BRICS are part of the whole world economic, you know, I think we're in a shell game. What they're doing is, yeah, they'll get BRICS, and who's going to control their money? Okay, if this woman is a WEF global leader and she's the head of the Bank of Russia, that ain't good. Okay, and then I thought, well, I wonder who these other people are, head of the Bank of China, whatever. So that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, that ain't good indeed. Yeah, go ahead, Keith.
Well, it's the same thing. If you can look up 15-minute cities, they're all over Russia, you know, and stuff, Denver, whatever, you know. The point is, there is change coming, but what's the difference, though, is it's multipolar. Is that this new, what do you want to call it, new world organization, I guess you call it, is going to work for the benefit of the whole of the society, whereas under the United States system, with who controls it, it's always like a mafia that wants to get their cut, their VIG, their payment off of each transaction, which is financially bankrupting countries. That, I mean, the idea of BRICS was to bring up the lower developed countries and stuff out of poverty through massive trade and stuff. And you can see this is when China started trading with the Solomon Islands down there, and the Aussies down there says, well, China's out our back door. And the United States, 8,900 miles away, says China's on our doorstep. This is how threatened they feel of China and this so-called Chinese aggression, Russian aggression. These guys haven't put military bases anywhere like that. It's the United States, and it's all to protect the world's reserve currency, the U.S. dollar.
Well, you know, it's going down the tube. China and Russia have dumped the dollar as Moscow announces new trade corridors. This was a story I hadn't yet mentioned. Russia announced this week, and this is from Responsible Statescraft, this week announced that it was its bilateral trade with China has almost completely moved away from using the U.S. dollar, highlighting the two countries' commitment to reducing the reliance on U.S.-led economic system. Aside from reducing dependency on the Western-dominated global currency, these de-dollarization efforts allow Russia and China to avoid the myriad sanctions, now preventing Moscow from doing business on the international market. Let me bring in Chicago Brew, who's just joined us. Brew, give us your thought.
Yeah, I want you guys to recall that the United States lifted that the Israelis that fly to the United States no longer have to get visas or any special, you know, identifier to fly in the country. They're just free to come and go as they please. So that's, you have people that are, you know, these protests are inorganic, and one of your callers had alluded to it, that they're bringing in agitators, you know, and then they can come in, agitate, and then leave Dodge anytime they want. I mean, they can fly in for a week and then leave for the weekend. I'm sure Europe has similar, since they have control of the politics and the money in Europe. I think they have maybe similar things. They can fly in and out of Ukraine, France, anywhere they want to go. They're just agitators. They got enough people to lead any type of protest or chaos that they want.
Nice observations. But Brew, what's your take on the student protests? Are you as enthusiastic about them as am I?
No. I mean, I was watching only like the one out of Austin. You know, you had all these black security guards. I mean, I saw like an older white woman, but everybody was black as far as who were the security or whoever it was. And they marched in some troops. I mean, this is ridiculous. They didn't do this for, you know, when they were burning down the cities for George Floyd.
Yeah.
And then they arrested a couple hundred people and then they let them all go. Well, you know, 90% of them were Jews, you know, I mean, they got to let them go, you know, so you can't do that, you know. But also, I don't even want to talk about the protests. Listen, what's going on over there in Gaza? They burned out Lahaina. They burned out Paradise in California, Paradise City, whatever it was called. They See, they got different ways of destroying an area. In the Gaza Strip, they're just dropping bombs on it. You know, I mean, they do these different things. They burn it down, like here in the cities. Whatever they do, they got to destroy it before they can reconstruct it. And a lot of this money is getting sent over. Sure, it goes to various places, like Keith alluded to. They're just saying, you know, it's funding these NGOs, which are mostly freaking Jewish run. And, you know, behind all of them was over 350 different NGOs focused on the United States alone. And most of our Jewish run. It doesn't even matter if it's Catholic charities. The Jews are behind that too. So, you know, but over there in Ukraine and whatnot, it's for reconstruction. Their economy is booming. They got a nightlife. They're bringing in new BMWs. They're build their entertainment industry. They got twice as many bars in Kiev and bars and restaurants in Kiev than when the alleged war started. And then they're reconstructing everything. They got to burn down and destroy and just wreck everything. Like they did here in the Civil War, they had to burn down the South in order to do what? Reconstruction. So that's where a lot of this money is going, to reconstruct. We're building something new for their new little playground and empire. And as you all, everybody knows that Zelensky is going to be the new Israel. Well, it's going to be a part of the greater Israel. They're going to have the big Israel that's based there now. What's already fundamentally that they already got buildings and pharmaceutical companies, you name it. Then they're expanding the Gaza Strip where they're going to get the gas and oil, but it's also going to be a pleasure dome, kind of like Dubai. It's going to be the Dubai of Israel in the Gaza. And then they're going to have Ukraine as their little, you know, go and chill out and relax and whatever. They're going to have that for business center and so on and so forth. So they're, look, this is a whole, who's ever behind the Jews, who's ever the Jews are the puppet masters of or whatnot, this whole thing is diabolical. And you guys all need to pull a step back. I mean, Keith's right on a lot of it. You guys are all right on or about a lot of it. But James, you're getting a little too emotional about it. You really got to take a step back. There's a huge agenda. It's been in the planning for a long time. And things are never as they seem. As it, you know, the old saying goes, everything you think you know is a lie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I love it. Drew. Yeah, go ahead, Keith. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have that thing I got off the way back machine about how the United States gas supply. When we hear about the Leviathan LNG field off of Gaza's coast, all you got to do is look up the Eastern Mediterranean pipeline, and you'll understand why the Russian Nord Stream 2 was blown up. Is because Israel is supposed to be the guarantor of this massive gas inflow across Greece and into Europe. And I have that video from what they call 2030 Ukraine. I can send you the link later, Jim, but it's a sure. video thing of everything is going to be high-tech, facial scanning, palm reading, all that stuff about, and this is all Ukraine. I think where a lot of this money is going is in reserve to start building this stuff, because remember, as it is, Russia hasn't destroyed Kiev and all that stuff. I actually think in the interim that other town, it's called Lviv or something like that, or anyway, that's going to be the new capital, because it'll probably be that Russia takes Kiev there. But they're rebuilding this mecca, and this goes along with EU Brock's chilling words here not too long ago that says that the Jewish kingdoms only last about 80 years and they're on 75 now. And this goes back to Henry Kissinger saying that the state of Israel would cease to exist in 10 years. There's a lot at play here right now, and I think that the Ukraine is the fallback for Gaza. Because
I think we all know that Ukraine was supposed to be the new Israel. Brew, I'm so pleased with what you're saying. Tell me what you think are the most important misconceptions I may have about what's going on in the world today. Go ahead, lay it on.
I think the immigration one is the biggest one. A lot of people want to say it's like, you know, I'll agree that it they're replacement workers. But a lot of people think
my apology. I meant Brew.
Oh,
Brew.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Brew.
What was the question?
What do I most have wrong?
I'm
I'm not going to go over everything. You know, I just want to let you know, going back as you were, Keith was talking there, I was thinking about the processor. And one of the comment I want to make is they have these protests to keep us busy in Europe and the United States and whatever, to keep everybody busy while they're doing their operations in other places, Ukraine, the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians, and so forth. They've just got to keep us distracted in our own territory. They've got chaos here to keep us focused here. You know, watch my right hand, while I do something with my left. It's that type of deal. And I also want to emphasize that they're not killing every single Palestinian. There's a bunch of people that are being deported. They're relocating a lot of people. They can't kill everybody. I mean, they can, but they're not. So they're relocating a lot of people, just like Ukrainians. They're not killing all the Ukrainians. Yes, they want to steal their land. They want to steal a property. They want to steal their heritage rights of being a Ukrainian and everything they inherited, the land and so forth. But they're not going to kill every single one of them. That's why they've relocated a bunch of them to Canada, United States, Australia, you name it.
Well, they want to get them out. They just want to get them out of Gaza, out of Palestine, out of Israel. I agree, Brew. I mean, anyway, that works. Death or deportation, that's good for them. Further thought.
Yeah, I mean, if they could have walked in there and just said, hey, would you guys all leave so we can take the land? And they said, okay, we would. Then we wouldn't have any bombs dropped. But, you know, I mean, they do have to drop bombs. They have to do the iron fist. And plus, they're making money with the weapons industries or whatever, the military industry and so forth. They're making money on that. They're making money on, you know, we know that they've organ harvest. It's one of the largest businesses they got is skin harvesting. So they're doing all that. So they're making money under money under money, you know, by doing what they're doing. And in the end goal, getting what they want. They will get all of Gaza. They will get all those people out of there, whether they're, you know, relocated or dead one way or another. And no one will be able to do a damn thing about it because they're the Jew. Bye-bye.
Well, Bruce, Keith, Brian, John, thank you all. Just terrific. Every spent much time in camp, family, your friends, people you love, care about, we do not care about it. Damn.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me in the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.